Time for that Monday basketball talk here on Tribe Time Sports. We do this every Monday. We've brought in the same guest all year, and I know he's feeling pretty good today. He is James Holas. He's our Tribe Time Sports NBA analyst, and right now his Celtics hold a 2-0 lead over the Dallas Mavericks in the NBA Finals, and it just seems inevitable at this point that Boston's going to be hoisting the Larry O'Brien trophy and raising Banner 18. Still a couple of games before they can do that, but again, he's got to be feeling pretty good. James, great to get you on today.
Two questions. Well, two things. Yep. One, can I put Drive Time Sports NBA and, analyst in my profile on X?
Of course.
And then two, I'm still cautiously optimistic, but the Celtics played like had a C-minus, D-plus game offensively last night, and they still won. Kyrie Irving is still playing like a puddle of poo in Boston, and the Lakers just got embarrassed. So this is a pretty good day.
Well, let's start. One, yes, absolutely. You're no doubt the Drive Time Sports NBA analyst. Two, you're telling me that defense still matters in the NBA then, right? Like, this is the biggest shocker to me. When people see that Dallas scores 98 points and you want to talk about how bad Dallas played offensively, no, Boston's fantastic on the defensive side of the ball. They were the best team defensively in the regular season. They've been the best team defensively in the postseason. And, yeah, it's not a great day for the Lakers. We'll attack number three here in a moment. But, James, I want to start with number two because, again, I just feel like in today's realm, we just don't value defense enough. And I thought that last night, Boston was absolutely spectacular on that side of the floor.
Exactly that, man. Boston, the NBA is so much about matchups, right? The Timberwolves were just a terrible matchup for the Nuggets. And then the Mavericks were obviously a terrible matchup for both the Thunder and then the Timberwolves. And now we're seeing, again, it's just all about matchups and a team's capabilities. Boston's versatility, their athleticism, and honestly, it's weird to say this. Let's start with Ime Udoka. He really put in some defensive fundamentals a couple years ago that are still there. Boston's been just so disciplined, and they're sticking to the principles. And even when their offense sputters, it's enough because their defense is just suffocating the Mavericks. And so, yeah, man, it's so funny because same on the same token, people say that Kyrie is a better player than this guy, that guy. Defense is never factored in, and now we see why defense should be factored in. So, it always defense wins championships. It's been one of those things, and it seems like it might be true here too.
Yeah, when you look at the first two games, and I want this from a Celtics fan as well as a basketball mind. Talk to me about what you have seen from Drew Holiday in the idea that he may very well be the most important player on the floor for Boston, because I think there's some legitimacy to that.
I'm seeing that, sure, Drew was overtaxed and asked to do too much in Milwaukee, and I think a big part of that, unspoken, is that Chris Middleton's not that same guy, and so Drew was asked to do too much. But when you put him down and you say, all we need you to do is fill in the gaps, and exactly what he does. He's a great cutter. He's great at finding space. He's great at relocating on the perimeter. He's a great standstill three-point shooter. He's strong as an ox. He can rebound. And he takes nothing off the table while adding defense and adding just vet. No, you can see he's been here before. So there is. I would have maybe laughed at you a few months ago if you told me he was their second or third or most important, whatever. But so far in this series, with Tatum short-circuiting offensively, and guys off the bench not doing much, and Kristaps being kind of limited first by the return and now maybe another injury, Drew has been absolutely rock solid. And, yeah, I if you were saying the key reason they won these first two games was Drew Holiday, I wouldn't argue with you.
No, and again, I want to go back to the defensive end of the floor. Got to pinpoint the fact that Dallas has been held under 100 points in two consecutive games in the NBA Finals. Now, again, James, I think sometimes we put too much emphasis on offense, but just by the way the game is played today, that to me is a mind-boggling stat. And it's been a very long time since we've been able to say that the best team defensively and offensively in the regular season has been the best team offensively and defensively in the postseason. And that's what you're seeing from the Celtics, who also, by the way, ran an 8-man rotation last night, if I'm not mistaken, right? This is the deepest team in the league, and they've been able to shrink this down to 8 men, and they still put the clamps on the Dallas Mavericks.
Our guy Peyton Pritchard was excellent during the regular season. He was good most of these playoffs. He's been terrible this series, and Tatum has been terrible offensively this series, and it hasn't mattered because, like you said, I think at the beginning of the series, I said, all right, let's say Luka's the best player in the series. I said, I'm pretty sure the Celtics have, like, the next 6 out of 7 of the best players, and it's bearing to fruition. speaking of defense, let's go. I looked this up yesterday because people keep saying, oh, well, Kyrie can't play this poorly again. Kyrie's an excellent offensive player, but back to the defense. He's played 132 games since March of 2022. He averaged 27 points, 5 assists, 5 rebounds. He shot 40% from 3. In the 12 games against Boston, now he's 0 for 12 against Boston. He's averaging under 20 points, and he's shooting 41% from the floor and 26% from 3. All those games have been losses. There's something to be said about discipline and having the horses to really wall off and maintain your defensive principles. And Kyrie, as great as he is, there's only so much he can do against an elite defense.
100%. 100%. I agree with that. And when you look at what Dallas wants to throw at you, let's go beyond Kyrie. Let's go beyond Luka here for a moment. P.J. Washington was the man for Dallas, really, throughout the postseason. And I don't think that P.J. Washington's been bad necessarily in this series. But when you have Kyrie playing at the inefficient level that he has played through games 1 and 2, you're asking P.J. Washington to be spectacular in a sense against a very good defensive team in Boston. And honestly, James, I just don't think he's that guy, at least not yet, right? So then you look at the 10 guys that Jason Kidd wants to roll with in this series. And this is, goes back to what you just said a few moments ago. If Luke is the best player in the series, you can make the case that Boston has the next 5 or 6 guys right in that role, because 40 minutes from P.J. Washington and getting normal production out of him, you're still getting below production out of Kyrie Irving. And to me, that's where the problem lies with Dallas. There's no one past P.J. Washington. You go guys 4 through 10, it's weak.
It is. And like P.J. is a fine role player.
Yep.
Regular season, he killed the Thunder, right? He turned into Ray Allen against the Thunder, but right so far against the Celtics, he's playing 38 minutes. He is shooting 12.5% from 3. And again, that's where it comes to principles. The Celtics have said, we are going to guard Luka straight up, and we're going to let him get his 30. Boom, he does it. We're not going to let him destroy us with assists. He had a good game assist-wise the other night. I think he had 11 last night, but he had 8 turnovers. And they said, Kyrie, we're going to let him operate on an island also. That means you're not getting these wide-open corner threes that Dallas feasted off of the rest of the playoffs. You're not getting all of these lobs. You know, they had like almost 60 lobs, while no other team had more than like 10 or something in the playoffs. Well, I think they had 2 last night. But it wasn't the same where there was a breakdown and some guy comes booming on the baseline and catches a draw-dropping alley-oop. It was different. So, you said it, and it sounds almost boring, and maybe like to the average watcher, this playoff series have been a slog, but the defensive principles of the Boston Celtics have been incredible to watch. Derek White and Drew Holiday have been absolute game changers, with steals and timely blocks and operating in the dunker and getting layups because they're getting behind the defense. And this Dallas is learning the difference between playing the 17-ranked offense in Timberwolves, and Dallas look like a great defense. They're playing against the offense that knows what they're doing and who's confident in themselves, and they can't keep up.
No, and you know what? You and I text a little bit back and forth last night. I don't even think yesterday was a bad showing for Dallas. I really don't.
It wasn't bad, but again, when you have a team designed that says, Luka, you do everything, and Kyrie, you score 25 off of Luka when you can, and everyone else is kind of fill in, and you play against a defense that knows how it has the horses and the length to not let them do that, like Luka's doing his thing. The 8 turnovers, though, for Luka is a big thing, right? Luka, when you're a heliocentric team like that and you everything comes from you and you feed everybody else, you spoon-feed your players, Boston's not letting those guys get those opportunities. The corner threes have been a staple of the Dallas offense. They're not giving those opportunities. They are really limiting they're limiting a lot of the C and D options and even the B options of Dallas. And right now, the A option, which is Luka, it's not enough.
Again, James Holish joining us right now as we talk about the NBA Finals going into Game 3, already a 2-0 Boston lead. James, we'll talk about the Mavericks here for a moment. We go back to the series against OKC, and I didn't see Dallas getting out of that series simply because I did not believe that Luka was anywhere close to 100%. And I thought the same thing, right, when we got to Minnesota. So maybe I don't think I've given Dallas enough credit throughout this postseason. But against an elite team, we're seeing it. Luka's not close to 100%. And that's not an excuse for Dallas. I think even with Luka at 100%, they're massively overmatched in this series. And I think maybe it goes 6 games if Luka's 100% instead of 5, which I still think Dallas gets 1 and that's it. But even with that, I mean, it's obvious that Luka is not at 100% when watching him play. I mean, yeah, he was efficient yesterday. You take a look at the stats. If you didn't watch the game, you would say, look at the stat line from Luka. But if you watch this Mavericks team play enough, it just seems like this is a guy that is wearing down at this point in time of the season, and it's just not there for him.
So I'm gonna maybe push back gently, because you're right. You could see by the end of the game, I think it was 1-for-6 in the fourth. After scoring 13 in the first, and he had 23 in the first half, he only scored 9 in the second half.
Yeah.
But a lot of that is by design, because I think Boston is putting him in every action they can, and they are attacking him on offense. And Luka is not known for his stamina, and it is, you know, deep into the postseason where the wear and tear of the season starts wearing on you. So I don't think anyone's really 100% right now. I think the Celtics are in a really good spot because they were so deep and were able to kind of gently use their guys all season, and that's what we're seeing. Luka's had a load all season, and this is they're reaping what they sown, right? But, yeah, if he was 100%, you're right, things might look a little different, but, hey, if it was the fifth, we'd all be drunk right now, right?
Well, I mean, even if he's 100%,
right,
They're still not touching the Celtics team. I think sometimes we love the game so much, right? We love analyzing the game. We love watching the game. We love the conversations that come after the game. Sometimes it's as simple as saying Team A is drastically better than Team B. And we saw that for many, 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 many years, up until there was kind of that seismic shift, right? The Western Conference dominated for so long. And I think when we got to the NBA Finals, you knew Team A was going to be drastically better than Team B. That's where we're at right now. And I have felt this throughout the entire postseason. Everybody is looking up at the Boston Celtics. So it's so simplistic, and I know it takes a lot of the steam out of the conversations that people want to have throughout the NBA Finals because it's the most exciting time of the year. But, James, it does not matter to me what Dallas has health-wise. They're not better than the Boston Celtics. It's that simple.
I agree. And even, like, we saw Porzingis, I think he tweaked maybe an ankle late in the game, got pulled, and from what I understand, he wasn't really limping around after the game. Like, it's a tweak, so let's hope he's okay. But even if, let's say, he's out of the game, I still think Boston's, like, you know, another level above this level of the Mavericks. And I've never heard a player say it, but P.J. Washington said it in the postgame. He's like, yeah, they're just better. They're the best team we've played so far. And Luka said a couple times, this is the best team in the NBA. They're not being complimentary. I don't think they're – I think, like, they're on the court seeing what we see. Right now, Dallas can't stop dribble penetration from Jalen or Jason. And when they collapse, Boston's doing a great job moving the ball. I mean, the Boston shot like 25% from three yesterday. And they, you know, they still won,
yep,
not comfortably, but it was like it wasn't down to the last seconds. So, like you said, man, sometimes the other team is just better. And I think a lot of teams kind of forgot what Boston looked like with Porzingis in the lineup because he missed so much time. And maybe they didn't watch Boston this year, but once he's in the lineup, man, he's like a cheat code, and Boston is an unfair advantage.
Yeah, and even with that, this is a great place to go with this conversation because here we are talking about the health of Luka. I don't know that you will comfortably get more than 23, 24, 25 minutes from Porzingis in this series, and that's okay. I mean, if you get 20 minutes, 20 productive minutes out of Porzingis the rest of the way, the series, it's over anyway, right? I mean, it doesn't matter. But if we talk about Luka not being 100%, let's be real. Porzingis isn't even close to being 100% himself.
And that's it, right? Like you said, even coming in before the ankle tweak, they were gently using him, right?
Yep.
Maybe 10, 12 minutes per half. And I think he still had the second highest, like, on-court plus-minus behind Drew, who's playing big minutes. Like, they win his minutes by an enormous margin because he's killing guys in the mid-range, shorter guys. Even with maybe he didn't make threes last game, but he spaces the floor, and that allows Jaylen Brown to get downhill and get to the rim. So it is what it is, man. Luka's great. Kyrie can be great. Boston has the tools to negate Kyrie some, and there's just not enough creation on the roster besides Luka Doncic. So that's something they probably need to look into next season for Dallas, no matter what happens. They need to get a backup point guard who can actually maybe run some offense.
Again, James Hollis joining us right now as we talk NBA basketball. James, we'll step away from the NBA Finals for just a moment, and we'll talk about the news that kind of dominated the NBA there for a little bit. The Lakers potentially landing Dan Hurley. That came to a close earlier today as he has decided to stay put at UConn. He'll now look to become the first college basketball coach since John Wooden to win back-to-back-to-back national championships. Rare air, no doubt. But, you know, we saw this story over the weekend that the Lakers were going to make a Godfather offer. And there was this number floated around of $100 million. And I thought, okay, you know what? This is really difficult for Dan Hurley to turn this down. He has said he wants to go to the NBA. Someone's going to give him a long-term deal worth roughly $100 million. He ain't going to turn that down. Then it comes out today that the Lakers made him a six-year, $70 million offer, which would have made him only the sixth highest-paid coach in the NBA, which ultimately tells me that the Lakers were not serious in luring Dan Hurley. Because this right here is the best coach available by a mile. I don't think there's anyone close to him. And if the Lakers seriously wanted to lure this guy from UConn, you've got to give him more than $20 million more than what he would make over the same span at UConn. To me, James, this is a PR spin. It reeks of the Lakers saying, you know what, we'll make a gentle push to go out and get Dan Hurley, because at the end of the day, they want J.J. Redick. I believe that wholeheartedly. When this offer came out, 6 years, $70 million, I don't believe the Lakers were ever serious in luring Dan Hurley from UConn. That's my take.
So I'm going to ask you a question in return, though, because like you said, I fully believe that it was maybe a PR stunt by the Lakers and maybe a leverage move by Dan to get a bigger contract from UConn.
Yep.
We'll never know, but very Hollywood drama going on because it's the Lakers, because all we heard was about J.J., and now it was a quick twist. Now we're away from J.J. Now we're coming maybe back to J.J. What do you think are the chances that J.J. Redick sees all this happen and is turned off by saying, wait, I'm your second choice? That's kind of almost not a slap in the face, right? It's business, but that PR-wise, that doesn't look good either. So it just seems like maybe a mess was made all around, unless there's a third target that we don't know about that's been, you know, it's from the shadows, a third guy's going to come up that was the actual target. But from the outside looking in, I don't follow the college game, but he seemed like a great candidate, and I don't know what just happened there. I can't think of another situation quite like this.
No, I mean, you go back, it was two decades ago, roughly, the Lakers tried to lure Krzyzewski from Duke. They end up going back to Phil Jackson after the whole Rudy T thing. To me, that's just a little bit different. To your point about J.J. and maybe a slap in the face to him, help me out on this one. I am trying to think of an occasion where a former player skipped the entire process of being an assistant coach, walked right into a head coaching situation, and had immediate success. I can't think of one. I can't think of that ever happening.
Yeah, I don't know if there is one. Like, did Jason Kidd find some success as when he's the first Bucks coach? I think they're okay. Not really, though, right?
Yeah, he's now. I mean, but you look ever since he lost that gig and he lost the Brooklyn gig, right? He's kind of rehabilitated himself being on several really reputable coaching staffs, right? I mean, Derek Fisher tried it in New York. It didn't work. Steve Nash in Brooklyn was a disaster, right? I can't think of one.
So I think Steve Nash in Brooklyn, they won games. So they weren't bad, but yeah, it definitely was. It turned out more not his fault, more because of the, you know, we could talk about the Kyrie conundrum there, but whatever. But yeah, I can't think of one where a guy just comes in as a former, like you said, no experience. So, I mean, it's the first time for everything, right? And now with this added piece of drama, though, like, and everything being so much more magnified in Los Angeles, this will be, what, their eighth coach in the last 10, 12 years?
Yeah, it's wild. Ever since Mike Brown, because we did the math last week here on the show, because remember, Bernie Bickerstaff had a short stint in between letting go of Mike Brown and going into Mike D'Antoni. They let go of Luke Walton. They had Byron Scott, Frank Vogel, Darvin Ham, and the list goes on and on and on. Ever since they were eliminated by the Dallas Mavericks, the year they were swept, going for their fourth consecutive trip to the NBA Finals with Jackson, it's been a revolving door. And so I like the idea of Dan Hurley in a long-term deal, just because this has been so revolving again and again for the Lakers. But James, I can't help but think this entire thing was kind of a PR stunt. And if you think LeBron James does not have a say in this, that's complete hogwash, right? There's no coaching search. The way the NBA is built today, there is no coaching search where the star veteran player on the team does not have a say. How often do we see stars get their coaches fired? There's no possible way the Lakers are moving forward without consulting LeBron in some form. There's no way.
Absolutely. LeBron's going to give the lip service and everything about LeBron not being involved, but that's just not how the NBA works. We know, you know, a guy like LeBron and Anthony Davis, they're players of those caliber. Either, hey, tacitly or wink, wink, there's always going to be some kind of input from them. So that's just silly to think otherwise. But yeah, and even that thing about, like you said, maybe this coach would have been a long term answer. But we know, like, this is the Lakers. There is no, hey, we have 4 years to develop. There is no, we are patient. This is the Lakers. You're going to, if you don't win and win pretty big in a year or two, that seat's going to get really hot, and no matter who they hire. So that's what it's been. That's what it's been for in Los Angeles forever, and especially nowadays, right, where there's not time. This is big money. This is high stakes. So that job, it's as attractive as it is, it has thorns.
Oh, 100%. 100% it does. So we'll end with this. Who's the next coach of the Los Angeles Lakers?
I want to say it might be J.J. still, but after the way this went down, that's such a strange look and very awkward. So I'm going to take the field. I can't call anybody. You tell me. You're way more plugged in, and you've been, you know, you're probably way more invested than I am. Who do you think it might be?
I think it's going to be J.J. I think James Borrego probably is going to be a major candidate as well, the assistant out of New Orleans. But at the end of the day, Shams has been too connected to all the news coming out of Los Angeles. It's not Wojo, right? And there was the report of Shams saying, okay, this is they're zeroing in on J.J. Redick, and then all of a sudden it shifted to Dan Hurley. And that's why, from the beginning, it just smelled like a PR stunt to me. That's been a guy that you've been able to really look into the insider information that he has produced with the Lakers, and there's been a lot of accuracy there. And he was the one that said J.J. Redick, a while ago. And also the timeline. I mean, when you look at what the Lakers have wanted to do, they made this perfectly clear that they may not have their guy until after the NBA Finals. So to me, it was a PR stunt. I do believe J.J. is still the guy. I think LeBron James has a hand in it, and I think the Lakers did everything they could to try to settle. Well, LeBron picked another coach. That's my take on it.
Yeah, man, and I know Borrego has he's pretty nice pedigree, and I know he's well respected. You tell me again, when you're talking LeBron James, Anthony Davis in the land of Lakers, is that a big splashy enough move?
Maybe for AD, because there is some history there, but for LeBron, I don't think so. I don't think it is.
Yep. So this is LeBron James. You got to bring in someone with some cachet. Someone with some name power, somebody with some clout, and respect from Borrego, sure, around the league. That's not LeBron James. So this is a pivotal signing going on here, and I think even though it happened during take the shine off my Celtics in the finals, I'm here for it.
Yeah, because it is an intriguing conversation, and that's what I was going to say. I hear the Boston Celtics are up 2-0. To me, this being the headline story, yes, I know the Lakers pack a very powerful punch nationally. I get that. They're the Yankees. They're the Steelers. They're the 49ers. Whatever national brand you want to talk about. But in the same sense, this is a direct correlation to the NBA Finals being fairly one-sided. That's why we're talking about this. Because it is simplistic when you talk about the way Boston is handling Dallas. So if I'm a Celtics fan, I wouldn't at all view this as a shot at Boston. I think it's just there's not a lot of storylines in the NBA Finals because Boston is that damn good.
Yeah, I can see other fan bases, but as a Celtics fan, after, it's been, 16 years, and we've been through the trials and tribulations, I'm soaking up every podcast. I'm reading every article. I'm enjoying every bit of this. I'm not going to tempt the basketball gods by saying that it's over because
it's over.
Things happen.
It's over.
I am loving it right now. This is the happiest I've been all season.
It's over.
Knock on wood. I'm not saying it. Knock on wood. Nope.
He's James Holas, always kind enough to join us. James, before I let you go, of course, let us know where we can find more of you.
I'm a lot more active on X. I'm sorry. I'm still calling it Twitter.
It's Twitter, man.
Yep. Twitter. These days with the games happening, at Snotty Drippin'. Think about Scottie Pippen and change a couple letters to homage to him. And I do the Casual Diehard pod with my boy Jesse and my homegirl Ace. Hopefully we record this week and I get to gloat a little bit. That'd be fun. But, I'm out there.
You deserve it. Gloat, gloat, gloat. James Holas taking out the time to join us. James, we'll have to do it again this week because I just don't think there's a lot of NBA basketball left in the season. So I'll hit you up. If not, I know we'll catch you again next Monday.
I'm excited, man. Let's aim for Thursday, and fingers crossed. I get to really cut loose on Thursday. But knock on wood, I'm not putting my chicken before the egg.
Thursday it is. We'll catch up then.
All right, brother.
Let's pause one more time. We'll come back, put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. A lot of basketball talk going on. We'll close with it. More coming up right after this. It's Drive Time Sports.